Okay. You okay? Right, afternoon, everybody. Everybody here? It's okay? People at the back? Yeah, lots of nodding heads. Good. That's nodding yes rather than nodding off to sleep, I hope. This first session in the afternoon, as you know, is known as the graveyard slot because people have had a nice lunch and they just want to have a little sleep. So my first objective is to keep everybody awake for the next half an hour. If I do that, I've done quite well. Okay, afternoon. My name is John McCreesh, and if I can cope with the technology, there we go. I live in Edinburgh in Scotland. It's my email address and my blog on the page there. I've spent most of my working life in IT in one form or another, doing a variety of jobs. I became interested in open source around about the year 2000. I started a SourceForge project, PHP MyEdit, which I'm pleased to say is still alive now, having gone through another two maintainers. So I have some coding credentials. However, I decided I could do a lot less damage by publicising projects rather than by writing code. I started working in the OpenOffice marketing project about 4 years ago. 2 years ago, I became co-lead of the marketing project, and then in May this year, became lead of the marketing project. So I must have done something wrong somewhere. The topic of my talk is why OpenOffice.org, which is the marketing project's theme for the year, and it's actually what the marketing project is all about. We exist really to answer two questions. One is, why should we contribute to the community? Okay, why should anybody devote the time and effort to OpenOffice.org rather than taking the dog for a walk, talking to your partner, reading the children their bedtime stories, all the other things you could be doing with your time? And equally, why should governments and companies spend taxpayers or shareholders' money on OpenOffice.org, which is something they don't own and never can? So that's question number one. Question number two is why use the software? Now, everybody here knows why you should use the software, but if you're, say, on the golf course with a friend, and they say, what's this OpenOffice stuff? Why should I use it? You know, you have about 1 minute to convince them before they go to sleep and lose all interest. So it's actually quite a challenge as to, in 1 minute, why should I use OpenOffice.org? So the marketing project has a few ideas as to how you should answer the question. I would like to present some of those and maybe hear your feedback on them. Okay, back to the first question. Why should anybody contribute to the community? Simon Phipps, who some of you may have seen around, had an interesting little posting on his blog about why people work on open source. Simon basically says, people work on open source projects for what they get out of it. Okay? Everybody puts in because they get something back out. He then went on to say that because everybody has sort of covered the costs, it's free for people to use. I was talking to him yesterday, and I think he's backed off from that second statement. This is probably a good thing, because for me, if I hand somebody a disk with OpenOffice.org and they say, is that really free? I say, yes it is. I like them to feel a bit guilty. Because if they feel guilty, they might say, oh, I'll give you some money, or I'll do some work for you. So I think guilt is good with open source. But anyway. But I think the idea that everybody is responsible for covering their own costs, everybody works on it because of what they get out, is an interesting idea. Why is it an interesting idea? Because if we can capture these stories, if we can tell people the great things about working for the community, then they will be more interested in joining us. If you see someone who's really enthusiastic about their new car, you think, okay, maybe I'll have a look at one of those cars. So if we can capture all the reasons why the people in this room, the people in this conference, work in open source, what does it do for them? Or we can maybe put some stories on the web, put some stories out in the press. It'll get people thinking, hey, yeah, I could do some of that. So you'll see there's a question there, which I hope everybody's had a copy of. There's a number of questions on it. I'll not read it out. But basically, asking people, just how much time do you spend on this thing? What do you do? And why do you do it? What do you get out of it? I'm not asking for an instant answer. This little box, with this little arrow, will be down by the help desk. Okay? Arrow, box, good. So, have a think about it. Fill out the questionnaire. All right, here's a good try. I get more, a bigger piece of blue tack next time. I'd be interested in hearing your replies, and take some of these away with you and give them to your friends who aren't in this room. Just explain to them, you know, why we're trying to capture this information and try and capture the stories. Now, I'm asking you to tell me why, what you get out of working for the community. I think it's only fair to share with you what I get out of it. And it's easiest to explain by letting you see, this is the kind of email that I receive. They're not sent to me, I read them. They're sent to you, they're sent to everybody in this conference. Okay? I love reading this kind of email. So here are some, I've got a dog, but I'm not particularly an animal welfare person. But the point is that out there in the world, there are lots of people doing wonderful things for charities, for non-profit organisations, for saving the whales, for running, you know, youth clubs, whatever it is. And in many cases, these guys find themselves up against the big guys. You know, so you're trying to stop, I don't know, Monsanto putting genetically modified crops in the field next to where you live. OpenOffice.org helps redress the balance. We give people doing good works the same tools, or tools of equal power, that the big boys have. We level the playing field. There's a lot of talk about digital exclusion. Well, we eliminate digital exclusion on the desktop. And that, for me, is something that's really worth doing. And that's why I do this stuff. There are lots of this kind of email comes into marketing project, all sorts of places. There was another one came in yesterday, just a couple of sentences. Awesome job. I really appreciate what each and every person involved has accomplished. I also applaud Sun for giving us this opportunity. Nice stuff. Okay, I'd like to do a little diversion. I'm sorry, I'm very hot on doing diversions. One of the things I like about OpenOffice is that it bridges two worlds. Okay, there's the world of the geeks, you know, the coders, the hackers, all these people. And there's the world of what's called the cultural creatives. I don't know if you've heard this term. It was a book, Paul Ray and Sherry Anderson, Cultural Creatives, How 50 Million People Are Changing the World. They did some, it was based in the States, they did a sociological analysis, and they looked at all the people who were doing things like, you know, saving the whales. They say, okay, these people are cultural creatives. Well, for us, these are people who wouldn't be seen dead feeding McDonald's to their kids. But they are people who currently use Microsoft on their desktops. You know, they're the people who go to the farmer's markets, they're the people who would never have GM foods. The coffee and the chocolate they drink are all fair trade. They're maybe go on eco holidays. They don't like junk television. All that sort of person. And in the developed world, these people tend to be affluent, they tend to be influential, and they're just the sort of people that should be finding out about open source. In fact, Peter Brown of the Free Software Foundation is kicking off a campaign this month to try and get free software out of the ghetto, so away from just being a geeky thing into the mainstream. And I think these are the people that you should be targeting. Okay, right, so that was why for individuals. Please, questionnaires, don't forget. Let's look at corporates. Why should they get involved? Well, the answer's easy. It's economics. Stupid. Okay. Nicholas Carr, a couple of years ago, wrote a book, Harvard Business School, Does IT Matter? Information Technology and the Corrosion of Competitive Advantage. Stirred up a complete fury in the professional IT world because he accused IT CIOs, people with purchasing power in big corporations, of wasting millions and millions of dollars on commodity software. Commodity software, things like your desktop operating system, things like your word processor spreadsheet. You know, no one is going to come along and say, I'm going to double the corporation's share price by putting in a new word processor. You know, it's not true. It's a commodity. Like electricity. If you haven't got electricity in your building, you can't work. If you have electricity, you can work, but your electricity is no better than the electricity next door. So what do? You try to get it as cheaply as possible. The way to get high-quality, cheap software is through open source. Now, people think open source was developed in California in the sort of 1990s, you know, these long-haired hippie, freedom, communism, open source, all this stuff. It's complete nonsense. Open source originated right in the very earliest days of computing in the corporate world. Now, I don't remember computers like this. I can't say I wasn't born then, but I certainly wasn't old enough to be playing on a computer. In the 1950s, a typewriter company called IBM decided to start selling these computer things. When you got an IBM computer in those days, it was completely useless. There was no software at all. There was no operating system, no bootloaders, nothing. And in fact, it was incredibly difficult to program them. So IBM got together the 17 companies that had bought them and said, okay, well, why don't you do the work between you? So they formed a user group, and as it says there, in the first year, they'd written 700 open source programs, which they shared among themselves. And on top of that, they could actually build the applications that added value to their companies. Now, I don't know how much $1.5 million in 1955 is worth today, but I reckon it's a hell of a lot of money. So open source was in there, saving people shed loads of money right at the start of computing. So why did it go wrong? It went wrong because the technology wasn't scalable. These 17 organizations were all in a small part of America. They could all get together and, you know, swap punch cards or whatever. As the industry grew, the technology wasn't there to make that distributed model scalable. But of course, everything's changed. Nowadays, we have all the technology to do this stuff. We can develop applications all over the world. We've got the internet and we've got personal computers. So we can spread knowledge of programming and development around the world. We can spread finished software around the world with virtually no distribution cost. We have what I've called the SourceForge toolkit. Okay, we have the Bugzillas, we've got the mail servers, we've got the wikis, we've got all this good stuff that enables people to work together collaboratively. And we've got some huge examples of distributed software development. And the comprehensive Perl archive network, any Perl people? Okay, I think that's what it stands for. A huge body of software maintained steadily over a period of time. So, in the 1950s, we had the economic need, but we didn't have the technology. We now have the technology, but do we have the economic need? Well, if you do a back of an envelope calculation for the UK, where I live, the UK FTSE 100, 100 biggest companies in the UK, about 3.5 million people, and they spend about that amount of money on, okay, Microsoft software, right, every year. So of that order. Each of those companies subsidised 10 open source developers, then the whole lot would cost the UK economy about 75 million per annum. There are enormous savings to be made to the economies around the world by moving to an open source development model for commodity software. And when the economics are that striking, it will happen. Have no doubt about it, with economic pressures like that, it will happen. There are actually some examples of where it's starting. A couple of years ago, Andrew Morton gave some interesting figures about the Linux kernel. The Linux kernel is the holy of holies of open source development. You know, it is. The people say this is the most pure example of open source development. But actually, nowadays, who's working on it? It's people who are financed by corporates. It's not hackers sitting in the bedroom. It's corporately sponsored employees. And it works. Interesting little diversion. OpenOffice.org gets a bad press from a lot of the open source community because we're seen to be dominated by one particular corporate sponsor. Now, I don't know how many Sun developers we have in OpenOffice.org, but I wouldn't say it's a million miles away from that. So somehow we're seen as impure, and yet the Linux kernel is seen as pure. If anybody tries that argument on you, tell them they're talking nonsense. Okay, sorry, that's not it. Little diversion. So, I didn't do that. So bottom line for...
I'm sorry, I need to interrupt a little bit. This is being streamed to the internet.
Okay.
And the people are sending messages, they cannot read your... because you're in the way of the camera.
Ah.
If this can be avoided as much as possible, we zoom in to for the people to get the content. I apologize.
Okay. We'll put the slides up later. Is that okay? It's a bit...
It's kind of odd, you know, it's like a bit awkward, but I...
Right, if I'll try could, and please. Stand still, but this is very difficult for me.
Just, yeah, or I'll stand there by the door, or something.
If you have some glue...
No.
It's okay.
Yeah. We did it with everybody else, we'll do it with you too, don't worry, it's not such a hassle.
Okay, I'll try.
Thank you.
But I'm not very good at trying. Okay, so to conclude... Why should corporates take part in open source development? Not because of any altruism, but because that's what they need to do to gain competitive advantage, and that's what corporations, and I suppose to an extent governments, are all about. Okay, so that was a brief run through why contribute for, speak to me, there we go, for individuals and corporates and... Just remind you, please, don't forget the questionnaire. The second part was your friend on the golf course. Okay, why should I use OpenOffice.org software? You have 1 minute to tell him before he falls asleep. In fact, you probably have 10 seconds before he starts to fall asleep. Now, you talk to people in the conference about why should we use OpenOffice.org, and you tend to get all sorts of very worthy statements. You know, all this, and it's all true, you know, ISO, IEC 96300 is very true, LGPL is very true, all this kind of stuff. But in marketing terms, these are features. There's some things about the community or things about the software. What people are interested in is not things, but they want to know, what's in it for me? What are the benefits of using it? And this varies from person to person. So, your friend on the golf course isn't interested that OpenOffice.org is multi-platform, including 64-bit. He probably doesn't know what a platform is. He probably doesn't realise that Windows is something separate from the computer that he bought, you know, last Christmas. So, what we've tried to do is to put together a little... It's a bit of humour, really, not taken too seriously, but the serious point, just to answer the question, why should people use OpenOffice.org? All you have to do is remember, OOOOpenoffice.org. Okay, so OOOOpenoffice.org. Great software, easy to use, and it's free. Okay, so the three points. Great software. No one is going to move from one piece of software to another if they think they're getting an inferior product. It has to be easy to use or they're not going to make the effort. And by the way, it's free. In that order. Let's look at the great software bit. So these slides, sort of, they start off and say, okay, yeah, that's a spreadsheet. You know, that looks a bit like Excel, I know what that is. Yeah, a bit more on it. Yeah, that really looks pretty cool. That looks like a great spreadsheet package. Yeah, that looks a bit like Word. Yeah, I can see there's a bit of typing, I can cope with that. Oh, actually, that is great software. And on Impress, similar thing. Oh yeah, that looks a bit like PowerPoint. I could type into that. I could. Whoops. There's something interfering with this. Not quite sure what's... Has anyone else got a wireless mouse in there? Or something? Okay. That's a great piece of software. So, first thing is, we're offering people top-class software. It can do anything they need to use. But secondly, it has to be easy to use. Okay, so included in that is the stuff about file formats. They've probably got Microsoft documents, so yeah, you need to be able to use those. You don't have to go back to school to learn all over again. And, oh, by the way, it speaks the same language as you do. You don't have to learn English to use it. And finally, the stuff about it being free means you can use it anywhere you like. You can give it away to friends. You don't have to worry about licenses. All that good stuff. And, yeah, is it really free? So, that's it. If you can remember 000openoffice.org, then you can remember why people should use it. It's great software, it's easy to use, and it's free. Okay, so the great software bit is important. Oops, I'm moving. The great software bit is important because people are suspicious of anything that's free. If it's free, it must be rubbish. So you have to get that message across first. Second thing is easy to use. You have to get that one across because A, people are terrified of computers. B, people are terrified of change. Put the two together and ask them to change something on their computer and they're completely terrified. So it has to be easy. And by the way, it's free. So anyway, that's a little bit of amusement, but it'll be up on the website. So if you want to take it away, you can leave it running as a demo or something at shows or whatever. A little bit of fun. But the thinking behind it is actually quite important. We've had lots of feedback. People say the OpenOffice homepage is boring. It doesn't tell you anything about the product. So the marketing project has been working on some ideas for... It's got a working title of whyopenoffice.org. A website where people can go and it gives them the simple message. It's got nice pictures on, it's not threatening, but it basically takes them through what the software does. This is a little proof of concept that's put together by Andre Wara, who unfortunately can't be here as he's in Australia, I think. I found out. I thought he was in Germany. It's work in progress, but say it's part of this getting the message across about whyopenoffice.org. Unfortunately, even that isn't enough to make people change. In the desk, for people who already have an Office software product, we fall into the commodity trap. Microsoft Office has been out there for years. People are used to it. And actually, 80% of the users only use 20% of what it offers already. Most people have got it for free, or they think they've got it for free. It was on the PC, or they brought it home from work, or you know, the grandmother gave it to them. It didn't cost them anything, and it does the job. You know, so why should they change? It's very true. What we need to look at is some trigger point that will make people think about changing. Now, obviously, if people are buying a PC for the first time, and there's a lot of them out there in the world, then they'll think about that. Then we've got an opportunity to influence them to go for openoffice.org. But equally, there are a lot of current users out there who are being prodded by Microsoft to start thinking about changing. That's also quite interesting for us. But let's talk about the first group first, the new software users. At the conference 2 years ago, we announced a target for OpenOffice.org to be on 40% of the world's desktops by 2010. Most of those desktops have not yet been made. Most of them will be used by people whose native language is not English. And this is tremendously important. Just a little diversion around the importance of language. In the past, people in many countries first of all got to learn English, and then they can start learning to use a computer. But why should that be? There's a date that should be in everybody's diary in OpenOffice, which is the 21st of February, which is celebrated every year by UNESCO as Mother Language Day. Try and preserve endangered languages. And this year, the topic for the whole year was the topic of languages in cyberspace. How do we get more language diversity into cyberspace and onto people's desktops? I think this is important for us because at these conferences, we spend a lot of time thinking about developing features. Okay, and in 2.0.3, there were lots of interesting little bits of features. You know, like you can now put a lot more names and objects in Writer. But I think there'd be very few people around the world who would have been prevented from using openoffice.org because those features weren't there. However, there are huge numbers of people who could be influenced into using openoffice.org if that software was available in their language. take one example. There are 210 million Bengali speakers who are waiting for you to finish localization. So one native language translation and a support, not just the translation, but the supporting activities of a native language community around it can bring in huge numbers of people, far more than adding small features. So I think that's something to bear in mind as we go along. So I would say this year is the year of UNESCO's Year of Languages in Cyberspace. Let's use it to celebrate the work of our Native Language Confederation. Right, back to the main script. So for people who are buying new PCs between now and 2010, language is going to be very important. For people who are current users, i.e. current Microsoft Office users, what is going to persuade them to change? Well, if you think about it, our advertising budget is, small. Think about Microsoft's advertising budget is enormous. So what we need to do is to find some ways of using Microsoft's advertising budget to persuade people to use OpenOffice. And in fact, they've been quite generous to us this year. I'd like to read you a statement, a little piece of history. This is a direct direct quotation. Although about 3 million computers get sold every year in China, people don't pay for the software. Someday they will, though. As long as they're going to steal it, we want them to steal ours. They'll get sort of addicted, and then we'll somehow figure out how to collect sometime in the next decade. Bill Gates, May 1998. Well, we're now well into that next decade, and Microsoft is spending a lot of time figuring out how to collect from all these people. So you'll have seen it in your own local areas. You've seen adverts in the press. In the UK, there's a lot of bribes. You know, if you find your employer has got some illegal copies of Microsoft Office, you ring this phone number, you know, and you get big sums of money. It's all anonymous. No one ever says who you are. Lots of pressure on third world governments. Okay, you join the World Trade Organization. We give you nice terms of trade. But by the way, Bill Gates is going to send his boys in and look at all your laptops and all your desktops. Technology. You've seen the fiasco recently about Microsoft trying to put spyware on people's PCs. Oh, this is a security update. Security update. In fact, what they're doing is putting spyware to try and see if that's properly licensed software or not. So Microsoft are doing all they can to upset current users who are worried about whether their software is properly licensed or not. So what do we do? Say, thank you, Microsoft. We start the Get Legal campaign. Okay, so if people are worried about getting legal software, we can give them legal software. We can give them software that's legal forever. There's no small print. All they've got to do is download it. And that's what the Get Legal, getoffice.org thing was all about. This is called counter-marketing. It's taking somebody else's advertising budget and turning them against it. It's really annoying if somebody does it to you. So, if your friend on the golf course says, well, why should I use openoffice.org? Say, well, if you don't, Bill Gates will come along, your wife and children will be sold into slavery, you'll be sent off to Mars to work in the Microsoft mines. Okay, there's another group of people who are reaching a trigger point. This one is actually a very interesting one. I'd like to talk a bit about Microsoft Office. I'd like to talk a lot about Microsoft Office. This was actually a change of tack in the marketing project. In the past, we've always resisted using the M word. We just talked about our competitor. Well, I think the gloves are off now. Interesting thing happened with OpenOffice 2. I haven't got a slide for this. Sorry, all you people out in cyberspace, I hope you can see the blackboard. This is low text stuff. If you think here was OpenOffice and here was Microsoft Office. With OpenOffice.org 2, we reached convergence. We reached the point where it's easy for people to move from one to the other. The look and feel was the same, the file format was the same, and all the rest of it. Now, marketing people, when they see this happen, they say, okay, the first thing you need to do is you need to get your products diverging again. Otherwise, you know, people don't always want to choose. And this is actually what's happened. And it's very interesting, the two different approaches, the approach of OpenOffice.org and the approach of Microsoft Office. Okay? So what was our vision? Our vision was very much technology-based. Okay? We said the thing that's going to differentiate us in the marketplace is open document format. Okay, we've got it, we've got the Oasis standard, we've got all this wonderful stuff. That's actually quite a difficult thing to sell. The people that you sell it to tend to be IT professionals who understand the importance of file formats. It's people like governments who understand the importance of Freedom of Information Act and being able to access data over a long period of time. It's governments who are possibly worried about some embarrassing things getting out in documents. You know, you've all seen stories in the press. The government has published some paper, they've deleted something in Microsoft Word. Some clever journalist looks inside and finds the bits they've deleted. You know, it's nightmares for governments. And corporates, to an extent, who've maybe got lots of corporate data in PeopleSoft or some big enterprise application, want to be able to get into the desktops. So, but it's quite a hard sell. It's a technical sell. Why did we do it? Well, okay, it's an open standard, but if you get there first, that's very important. You're the reference implementation, and everybody else, when they bring out ODF, what people do is they create a nice, clever document in OpenOffice.org. They save it, and they say, okay, Abby Word or whoever, you try and read it and tell me what happens. So being there first is quite important. Microsoft, on the other hand, the world's biggest and most affluent technology corporation, didn't go for a technology-based solution at all. Now, we've heard endless reports from people working within Microsoft that when they saw OpenOffice.org 2, all hell broke loose. You'll all be aware that what was Microsoft Office 12 and has now emerged as 2007 was delayed about 18 months. And we have it on good sources. One of the main reasons behind that was the need to make it look different from OpenOffice. And that's exactly what they've done. Underneath the technology, they don't care about. What they do is they've created what they call a new and quite engaging user interface. This is aimed very much at consumers. You know, it's the old Microsoft ploy. So you go along to the computer shop, you bring a PC home for Christmas, and it looks cool, it looks sexy, because it's got all sorts of nice things on the screen. And then people want it at work. You know, I've got this nice thing at home, why can't I have it at work? Microsoft's game is using this to secure control of the desktop. There's been a lot of stuff come out of Redmond in the past 12 months or more about how OpenOffice.org is 10 years behind. Okay? This is the official party line, we're 10 years behind. And what they want to do is make us look 10 years behind by putting fancy new widgets on the desktop. That way, they put us into catch-up mode, so then we spend all our effort on OpenOffice.org 3. It's just, we do nothing but catch-up, trying to look the same as Microsoft Office 2007. And there is a belief in Microsoft that if this happens, some microsystems will give up, that they're not in it for playing endless catch-up, and that will be the end of Sun's involvement. So, an interesting play. OpenOffice play is technology-based. Microsoft is very much consumer and look and feel based. This is actually a huge gamble on Microsoft's part. There's a wonderful book, Airline Reservations for Sonic the Hedgehog by Martin Campbell Kelly. If you haven't read it, I strongly recommend it. There's a lot of fascinating stuff inside it. 1984, MicroPro was the biggest player in the word processing market. They had about a quarter of the market at the time, which was, there were a lot more players then. They did a big look and feel change with WordStar 2000, and they blew it completely. Everybody went off and bought WordPerfect 4, and what's it, by 1990, WordPerfect had 90% of the market. So people don't like look and feel changes, so it's quite a big gamble from Microsoft. And equally, Microsoft, there's this sort of stuff, Microsoft's marketing is infallible. It isn't. It took them 3 goes to get Windows right and get it out in the marketplace, get people to accept it. Microsoft can make mistakes. They do make mistakes. In the past, there hasn't been much competition. now there is, and that competition is free. So that's quite a different game. In fact, the initial response from a lot of the industry analysts to the previews of Office 2007 were distinctly lukewarm. People saying, "Hey, you know, why are we put to all this trouble? Why do we have to take our staff and retrain them just to use another Microsoft product? You know, what's in it for us?" And in fact, there were more studies that came out that said, actually, 2007 is the wrong upgrade. Some useful numbers to remember there. Migrating to OpenOffice.org2 is 90% cheaper. It's a one study, and then a local example here. So, our message to the world is, this Microsoft upgrade is the wrong upgrade. Okay. So, when Microsoft announced they were going to do a test drive of 2007, so you could go on the internet and play with something that looked like 2007, we said, yeah, take a test drive. We'll give you a test drive. And if you like our car, you can keep it. So, again, the more we get into the Microsoft sales pitch for 2007, the more they try and push people to the trigger point where they have to make the choice to migrate, we'll get the message, that is the wrong migration. We have a better route for you. Okay, so, but let's make no mistake on this 2007 business. Microsoft believes that if they win this battle, OpenOffice.org will be permanently in catch-up mode, and Sun will get bored and go home, or go off and play with Solaris or do something else. They're also aware that if we win, then the open document format becomes the new desktop standard. And once people acquire the taste for OpenOffice.org running in the Windows, they might think, well, let's try some of this Firefox stuff, or maybe this strange Linux thing might not be quite the end of humanity as we know it. Okay, so to maybe summarise all that in a slide, if possible. Why OpenOffice.org? Okay, well, we think the next few years are absolutely crucial to what happens in the software industry and the way that the industry goes over the next 10 years. We have an opportunity to return commodity software development to where it started, to where it was in the 1950s. Cooperative venture based on open source. Through ODF, we have an opportunity where users actually own their own data. At the moment, if you create documents in Microsoft Word, you can only access those by permission of Microsoft. If you haven't got Word, you can't access them. With ODF, you put your data in ODF, it's yours forever, and any application is supported with enabling to read it. On the native language front, we have the opportunity to bring software tools to people in their own native language across the world. All the work that's going on in the internationalization, in translation, is lowering the barrier, making it easier and easier to do translations. The value add we can provide in OpenOffice.org is creating the native language community roundabout that can promote and support people using the product. And if all this goes ahead, we're actually not just changing the IT industry, but we're changing the most successful monopoly that the world has seen, certainly at least since the British East India Company owned half the globe or whatever they did. So, if people say, well, why OpenOffice.org? Like in two sentences, that's it. When I spoke about Michael Campbell Kelly's book, The History of the Software Industry, when he brings out his next volume of that, I would say OpenOffice.org will be several chapters of it. Okay, we are changing the world. We're changing the world, not just for the software industry, but for all the people, the millions of people who use our software. I think that's a superb place to be. That's where I want to be there. I hope you all do, and enjoy it. Thank you very much. Questions, I'll do my best to answer them. Yeah? Oh, the typewriter company.
Yes, that's right. In fact, quite right. In fact, all the software that we made and the film itself, the modern. not selling it right now. We're not doing it for Thermal's nefarious profit motives or whatever, because obviously we don't directly monetize things at all. We often participate in these kinds of initiatives because they are essential to changing the fundamental economics for to reset a marketplace to a greater degrees of competition and to reset the economics to allow for new kinds of innovation. So much of the consolidation and domination of the software marketplace by various different vendors has really stymied potential innovation by creating enormous barriers to entry. So an awful lot of the reason why these projects, and we ourselves spend dollars, some of the range of $250 to $300 million a year on open source projects. It's a very sizable investment. And as I said, in much of that investment, we don't directly monetize any of those assets ourselves. And you're quite right, not for pure altruistic reasons. We have ulterior motivations to do it. It's a very important point. A lot of, whether we, you know, I love the idea of millions of individuals, you know, getting together and you know, marching forward with great enthusiasm because of some great set of principles, and that's wonderful. An awful lot of the energy and the finance and the stability and the credibility in the eyes of actual end user consumers, once you get beyond the individual consumer into, you know, corporations and governments consuming stuff, will come from companies with the resources to put their name on. Linux became a real phenomenon once IBM and Intel and HP and a few others said, we're going to make this work. We're going to guarantee it. The open office initiative has extraordinary potential, and I think we need to move it to the next level, per se. As structured right now, there are a number of reasons why we don't have 400 programmers working on open office, although we ourselves at IBM have, depending on our release cycles, anywhere between 50 and 120 developers working on the workplace code, which is a derivative of open office. And we'd very much love to combine that resource and contribute it to the overall good. But there are structural issues that preclude a commercial company's ability to interact directly with the community. And they involve a bunch of legal, structural, governance, and licensing issues that preclude our ability to do that, however much we'd like to. So that's one point. Mm-hmm. The second point is that it is really essential, as you quite rightly pointed out, that there are high function, cost-competitive alternatives to the incumbent monopoly available in the marketplace. And we are absolutely committed and supported to an extraordinarily successful and prosperous open office community. We also think that we need to really take this to the next level, that there's some paradigm beyond the office productivity suite. And we need to start making investments into building a set of community assets that start to really push beyond this paradigm into creative uses of these new documents that have been liberated, that have to do with content management systems and next generation workflow and live collaborative co-editing of these documents, and integration with form stuff, where the whole concept of a document in a word processor gives way to a much more of a roles-based interaction with a piece of information that can contribute to some overall corporate or governmental welfare. So we need to start thinking about, and I'm very conscientious about contaminating all the very good and important work that Open Office does, but we need to start thinking about a sister project, a complementary capability that is a group of very commercially friendly assets that anyone can reuse as componentry so that we can fundamentally change the underlying economics and provide a whole new basis for a whole new generation of innovation to push forward to some of these new paradigms.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of very good points there. Making the Linux kernel, which you talked about earlier, sort of started as pure open source, you know, the guy in his back bedroom, and grew from there. There are several other projects, such as openoffice.org, which have been open sourced. Now, they started off in a commercial area and have been open sourced. And there are differences in the end product between those two, and a lot of the issues that we grapple with are due to that. So everybody in this room is very pleased with the support that we get from Sun, but from stability and going forward, the more people that we can get in, the better. And equally, I'm sure Sun will be only too happy to share some of the cost burden with other contributors. As you say, it's a matter of getting the big boys' heads and banging them together until they see common sense. My argument is that the economic argument is so enormous that if it gets big enough, then even the big heads get the heads banged together sooner or later by the bean counters. So I look forward to that day as well. On your second point about the changing paradigm on the desktop, whatever you want to call it, I sincerely hope that 10 years from now, more, we still don't have the slavery of the word processor, the spreadsheet, the presentation package. You know, there must be more, better ways of expressing ourselves. I don't think they've grown up through history, but we shouldn't feel constrained by that forever. I'm sure there will be new ways of handling information, handling data. What I would say that openoffice.org has given to the world through ODF is the continuity between the applications we have now and the applications we can only dream of. What I do hope is that the link between those two is ODF, so that the spreadsheets, the documents that we write today, our children and our children's children will be able to read them in whatever wonderful software they've got programmed into their brains by then. And that's what I think the importance of ODF is in that. Okay.
Unfortunately, that's what needs to be overcome in the corporate environment. In other words, these people are safe to go Microsoft. They said they've done due diligence.
Yep.
They've gone open office solution. Something fails. It's their neck on the line. They want to take it off the line. And the IT has had an uncertain future in worlds such as the UK, in the United States, et cetera, where people's jobs are very volatile. Okay, they don't want their heads on that chopping block. So they're playing it safe. If the open office organization can show that and demonstrate that their support is actually far superior than what we get from Microsoft itself, that's a biggie. Now, the second thing is I have introduced open office to a few people, and the first thing that they run across is they come up with some very complex documents, say, this little thing didn't work properly. That's another big thing. If compatibility comes as close as they can to 100%, that would actually win quite a few. And the second thing is, I appreciate everything supporting Linux very, very much. I think that's good. I could hope that somehow they could go over the barriers and eliminate the resistance they have to entering the open office support and actually join in there a little bit more, because this is actually where Microsoft is the most vulnerable. Linux is still not going to be adopted as quickly as
okay, I think so. There was three points there. The first one was about commercial support, and I agree with you. My day job is with a big corporate, and the first thing when we propose any software is, okay, who's going to support it? You know, so I had a project a few years ago that wanted to use SSH. First question was, well, we need to buy it from somebody. Okay, we found someone in California who would sell them a copy of SSH. Next question was, okay, well, who's going to provide a support contract? You know, there's a lot of money to be made out there for people supporting open source. And I think there's a critical mass effect will creep in. It's interesting. I also think the other people who have a big role here to play are the professional bodies of in the UK we have the British Computer Society, the professional institution for IT people. They have a big role in educating the corporate CIOs or whoever about some of the issues around support, and maybe Microsoft support isn't all it's cracked up to be anyway. So that was your first, the compatibility one. I did a conference a year ago where we had about 12 trade stands, and everybody had prepared their Microsoft presentations and PowerPoint. Went along to the conference, and there was a slightly different version. It was a newer version of PowerPoint running on all the laptops that had been hired for the conference hall. And every single person had to change their presentation one way or another. And the most glaring example was the company logo appeared upside down for some reason in this new version of PowerPoint. So don't get too hung up about compatibility, because if people start on this dodgy migration to 2007, I suspect they'll have quite a lot of compatibility issues. There's a trend developing here.
Well, they're actually fun. And that was part of my journey to overcoming resistance. You know, we're here, we're a gold level sponsor. We're trying. We're talking. I actually wanted to comment on the support issue, because we're pretty big. We're like 330,000 people. We decided to ask our CIO's office. We've been through several generations. We have Lotus products we still sell, but then we have Microsoft Office in terms of, for the most part.
I think the people in the World Wide Web are having difficulty hearing you. Is there a short point you'd like to make?
Yes, the short point is we asked our CIO about support for Office and Microsoft. They said you hardly ever get that. So the point is that a lot of this is people think they want support. They think they want the same thing. But the current models of how they're getting the support are shifting much more to community-based. What was the guy down the hall is now the guy on the web, on the web or whatever. So yes, you have to convince people it's there, but I think you have to convince something there's something else that's there, which is maybe even better.
Okay, if there's a desperate last question I can take, and otherwise we really should be letting you move on to the next session. Everybody happy? Okay, thank you, I hope you enjoyed it.